Recently, the Washington Redskins have been synonymous with controversy, but in the not-too-distant past, D.C.'s beloved team was considered a model franchise that put together one of the most unique and colorful dynasties in NFL history under the leadership of Coach Joe Gibbs. Based on more than 90 original interviews with key sources, the new book Hail to the Redskins by sports writer Adam Lazarus gives readers access to the players and coaches who championed the extraordinary era from 1981 to 1992, charting the team's rise from mediocrity to its stretch of 3 Super Bowl titles in 10 years. I spoke with Adam Lazarus about when you look at that period of time, what many people forget to remember.
I think 2 things get missed, and Gibbs actually told me this personally. You know, I told him, I sat down with him and I talked to him about this book. He sort of, as an aside, he said, I'm hoping with this book you can really give the people on the defensive staff and the defensive side of the ball the credit they deserve, because they did all that without my help. That, you know, Gibbs kind of worked with the offense and was the head coach, but he didn't meddle with the defense. He didn't do anything on that side of the ball. He really never came into meetings or, you know, said we're going to do this week. He left that to his assistants, and they were a great, great defense in the 80s and early 90s, especially in 1991. That was one of the greatest defensive runs any team has ever had in NFL history. And I think most people remember about the Redskins, they remember John Riggins and Joe Theismann and the heroics Doug Williams achieved and a lot of the offensive people. And even when they remember the defense, there's a couple players they remember. Daryl Green's in the Hall of Fame, and Dexter Manley was a very colorful figure and a very good player who got a lot of headlines. But overall, the guys on the defensive staff and the unsung heroes of the defense, I think, were really special. And the other thing is the people who found Gibbs' talent, the scouts, the personnel people. The first general manager was Bobby Bethard, who was a great GM and eventually left and went to San Diego and took that team to the Super Bowl 1 year. And the man who followed him, Charlie Casserly, those guys were 2 of the greatest general managers of that period. And that's something I think that often gets overshadowed by Gibbs and the Super Bowls, was the players they found so often to replenish the roster when they needed it.
Talk a little bit about how Gibbs came to the team and why he was so good in Washington.
Well, he had been an assistant for a long time. He was, I think, 42 when he took over. He had been coaching for 20-some years, mostly at the college level, had come into the NFL as an assistant and sort of a protege of Don Coryell, who was a great coach and who he'd actually played for. He was considered one of those hot offensive coordinators. You know, that's something that you still see today is, you know, when a team does really well and it's one side of the ball does exceptionally well, the person who's, you know, the offensive or defensive coordinator of that particular unit often gets a lot of attention and a lot of interest from other teams looking for head coaches. And that was exactly how it was under Gibbs. He was a great offensive coordinator for this team in San Diego that had been to the playoffs several years and rewritten the passing records out in San Diego. And, you know, the Redskins saw that, and they saw the talent and saw the possibility, and they brought him in 1981. He didn't have any success his first month or so on the job. They lost their first 5 games, but they quickly turned it around, and they won a Super Bowl in their second season.
What do you think can account for that turnaround? How much of it was the raw talent, and how much of it was Gibbs actually molding that talent?
They had great talent. There's no doubt about it. John Riggins was, he had retired the previous year in 1980. He sat out all of 1980. But everyone knew he had been a great back. If they could get him in the right system and get him back to playing shape, he was going to be one of the best players in the league, and he certainly was. And Joe Theismann was another very talented veteran who I think needed the right offensive mind and the right offensive fit. And Gibbs gave him that, and that helped get the offense on track. And on the other side of the ball, there were just a very sort of young group of players that were still learning. That's something that, again, you have to give credit to the coaching staff. There was talent there, but I think Gibbs, especially with the younger players and the receivers, the skill players, the offensive linemen, became famous, the Hogs. That was one of their famous little subgroups on the team, how Gibbs and his staff really made them among the best in the league. So I do think there was talent there, but Gibbs sort of put everything together and the staff he assembled. They were really sharp and knew how to get young players ready for games, and it certainly proved it those first few years.
As I mentioned, Adam Lazarus is our guest. His new book is Hail to the Redskins. The subtitle is Gibbs, the Diesel, the Hogs, and the Glory Days of DC's Football Dynasty. Tell us a little bit, since you just mentioned them, about the Hogs and these offensive linemen and how they became a phenomenon.
You know, even in today, I don't think NFL in football, the linemen get the credit they deserve. You know, there are certainly some guys who get attention, but they're kind of the thankless, nameless guys on the team who do all the blocking for the superstars that get all the commercials and the big contracts and all of the, you know, love from the fans. The Redskins just somehow, at this time, they appealed to the Washington fan base. Part of it was because I think they were sort of a motley crew of guys, you know, didn't really care about how they dressed or how they looked, were just sort of everyday Joes in a way, you would say. I think that attracted a lot of people to their camp. Another thing is these stories of them sort of hanging out after practice in what they called the 5 o'clock club, which was this dilapidated old shed that they hung out and drank beers after practice, well, before they went home. Stories of that became sort of legendary in D.C., and I think a lot of fans, you know, saw them as they're just like me. You know, I like to have a drink after work and before I go home and hang out with my buddies. And I think they appealed to that type of fan base. You couple that with all the success they had, winning the Super Bowls, and especially winning Super Bowls with a really powerful running game that the Redskins had, that brought more fans to their attention, and I think that's one of the reasons why so many people got on the sort of bandwagon, and they became very popular and very well-known among the city and outside of the city, and they also did a great job marketing themselves with a nickname like the Hogs. There was no shortage of pig-related memorabilia, rubber snouts and T-shirts and things like that. They had their own fan base called the Hoggettes, where these people dressed in hog costumes. So it was just sort of the right time, the right place, and all the winning certainly helped it.
As I mentioned in the introduction, 3 Super Bowl titles in 10 years. What makes that so fascinating is 3 different quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, we look at the history of the NFL. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Super Bowl coming up this February. And the big names that you talk about, the ones who won multiple Super Bowls, are Joe Montana and Tom Brady and Terry Bradshaw and Roger Staubach and Troy Aikman. All those guys, they all did it with one coach, winning a handful of Super Bowls in bunches, largely the same team, largely the same style. With Gibbs, it wasn't that way at all. It was 3 distinctively different teams, 3 different quarterbacks, 3 very different talent skills, too. You know, Theismann was as different as Williams, and Doug Williams, who won the 2nd Super Bowl, was just as different as Mark Rippon, who was the quarterback for the 3rd Super Bowl. So that speaks more than anything to Gibbs's adaptability, his savvy when it came to taking a player who was there at that moment and making him work for their system. Instead of, you know, trying to shove a round peg in a square hole, they were kind of, Gibbs was very smart about taking a player's talent and doing what he could with them to win for his team.
I think it's impossible to read this book about this dynasty, about this time, and not, as you come to the conclusion of it, say, well, what the hell happened to the Redskins?
I think, you know, everything comes to an end. That's certainly one way to look at it. You know, every dynasty's ended. The Steelers fell on hard times in the 80s. The Cowboys fell on hard times in the 90s. The 49ers eventually fell on hard times. Every great dynasty, even the New York Yankees, have had their bouts of falling on hard times. So that's just the game. That's just the sport. But the one thing that you can't ignore when the Redskins dynasty of this period pretty much caves in, it doesn't slowly decline. It essentially just collapses upon itself. And it's partly because Joe Gibbs retired. He very suddenly retired. Or it wasn't at the end of the season, too. It was already into March, which was, you know, start of things getting ready for the next season. It was a very surprising revelation that he was walking away. It left a kind of a huge hole in the organization. And at that exact same time, that very same week that Gibbs retired, the NFL opened sort of a new chapter in its history, and that was this unrestricted free agency and eventually the salary cap, these new changes. It sort of leveled the playing field across the entire league. So this point in 1993, when Gibbs walks away and the NFL's going into this new era where personnel and rosters are handled in a very, very different way than they had been handled for decades, that was one of the reasons why you can look at that dynasty and see why it basically fell off a cliff.
So just as the season gets ready to start and the controversies that have dogged the team, whether it be the search for a quarterback or also, of course, the name of the team itself, which has caused great controversy for many years, does that dog the team and keep it from getting away from all of those headlines and doing what it's supposed to do and win a football game?
They certainly don't help. There's no doubt about it that distractions are, you know, do have their toll, take their toll on a franchise. Everything from the name controversy to the drama that's played out with their coach and their quarterback, and even now, if you're familiar with the headlines with the wife of the team's general manager,
right.
These are certainly things that you don't want to be addressing and focusing on and trying to keep your players avoiding. When you're trying to win football games and just trying to get back to respectability, let alone winning a Super Bowl. But, you know, the other half of the coin is if they were winning through all this, the name change, everything, it wouldn't matter. You know, those wouldn't be issues. Winning cures a lot of ills. And I think if the team had been able to win more games and avoid a lot of the bad personnel decisions they've made, then they would be in better shape on the field, which would probably help their profile and their image, and I think would make some of these other things sort of muted a little bit.
Adam Lazarus's new book is Hail to the Redskins. It is published by William Morrow. Adam, thanks very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much. The name of the book, Hail to the Redskins, Gibbs, the Diesel, and the Hogs, and the Glory Days of DC's Football Dynasty. It's published by William Morrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.